Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
From Bonn, Germany, with the stories making headlines across the continent, this is DW's Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideo. Coming up, the UN says war crimes and crimes against humanity have been committed in Central African Republic, but Amnesty International says there is ethnic cleansing as well.
What we found was that there was a concerted campaign of violence against the Muslim population that was aimed at forcibly displacing them from the entire western third of the country.
Ghanaian fishermen decry illegal fishing, which threatens the industry.
The business is collapsing. Now the foreign vessels have increased too much.
And Nelson Mandela remembered in a musical performance here in Germany. Just some of the stories we've lined up for you in this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Differing views. Amnesty International insisted on Friday that ethnic cleansing is happening in Central African Republic. Amnesty's view differs from that which is put forward in a new UN report. The report says there is enough evidence war crimes and crimes against humanity have been committed by both Christian and Muslim militia in CAR. But it falls short of terming the devastating conflict as genocide or ethnic cleansing. Joan Marina, Amnesty International's senior crisis response advisor, visited CAR in February and explains why she believes ethnic cleansing is happening.
I'd first like to emphasize that I think we coincide with the UN's findings on many points. Most importantly, the fact that war crimes and crimes against humanity, the most serious crimes under international law, are being committed in the Central African Republic. In terms of the question of ethnic cleansing, I don't think the UN had the opportunity to travel across the country the way that we did, given the security conditions at the time that they visited. So what we found, we sometimes really landed in places just after massacres had occurred. And what we found was that there was a concerted campaign of violence against the Muslim population that was aimed at forcibly displacing them from the entire western third of the country. So there was really a concerted effort to kill and forcibly displace Muslims. And that effort has been very successful. So now the western third of the country, the most populous area of the country, is largely cleansed of its Muslim population, except for a few enclaves.
How do you explain the fact that the UN somehow refuses to acknowledge what your report suggested or what your report found in February?
One section in the report where they describe the mass exodus of the Muslim population. And I think the UN report sees that as a symptom of the violence, but what they fail to understand is that was the actual goal of the violence. And it also may be that they didn't interview, and I'm only speculating here, but I don't know whether they interviewed members of the anti-Balaka militia. But if you speak to them, and we spoke to many of them, they make no secret of the fact that their goal is to kill Muslims and to expel Muslims. They do not want Muslims anymore in the areas that they control. They want Muslims, in fact, out of the entire Central African Republic.
Now, the UN report warns that if immediate action is not taken, then the conflict could turn to genocide. Shouldn't action have been taken long before?
I think the international community has been very slow to respond with the necessary forces, the necessary resources to deal with the extent of the violence in the Central African Republic. And what we saw was that serious ethnic cleansing began in early January, late December, early January. And it's been ongoing for months now. There was a UN resolution and there will be a UN-mandated peacekeeping force that will be deployed starting in September. But by September, there really will probably not be very many Muslims left in at least the western third of the country.
So what you're saying is that you're not very optimistic about the fact that this new UN peacekeeping force would be able to contain the violence that is being witnessed or is happening now in the Central African Republic.
Well, I mean, my concern is, one, the time delay, the fact that it's not going to be deployed until mid-September. And two, just looking at the peacekeeping forces that have been deployed, they have been very slow to reach their mandated numbers. So, for example, right now there's a Eurofor military force that is still not up to, you know, not nearly up to its mandated number of troops. The international community has expressed concern about the Central African Republic, but there seems to be very little enthusiasm to actually send military forces to control the violence. And the problem is there really is no effective government in the Central African Republic. There's no functioning national army. The police are mostly unarmed and certainly unable to deal with the level of violence there. So without an international force, the people of the country, the civilians, are left defenseless.
Amnesty International's senior crisis response advisor, Joanne Marina. As we've just heard, the interim government in Central African Republic remains weak. But in a bid to strengthen its institutions, it has initiated a four-point plan that seeks to bring justice and reconciliation to the country, as well as improving security. This report by D.K. Kopp has been adapted for Africa Link by Victoria Engels.
More than a year after the outbreak of violence in Central African Republic, the country remains tense. The political battle for power, as well as the fighting between different groups within the population for the country's scarce resources, has escalated into a religious conflict between Christians and Muslims. In April this year, the UN Security Council voted to send a 12,000-strong peace mission to the country, but this will probably not begin before September. At present, there are some 6,000 troops of the African Union's International Support Mission in the country, as well as 2,000 troops of the French Sangaris operation. According to Sangaris commander Francisco Zoriano, the French troops will begin their withdrawal in mid-September. Meanwhile, the government in the capital Bangui has taken measures to stem the violence. The main tool is a new four-point plan, details of which were given to DW by José Mesango from CRA Ministry of Reconciliation.
We'll strengthen dialogue with the armed groups who are responsible for the insecurity in the country.
Efforts are also to be made to get the younger population on board, as it is generally unemployed young men who are recruited by the various militia gangs. In the last few days, Prime Minister André Nzapayeke has been energetically seeking talks with the leaders of various districts in Bangui. He also intends to inform young people directly about the new plan. Thibault Lizeur, an expert on CRA with the International Crisis Group, welcomes the plan but does have some reservations.
We must ask what concrete effects such a plan can have, since, at the moment, the fighting and killing are continuing.
Lizier says it should also not be forgotten that about a quarter of the population have fled their homes, which means restoring peace and stability will be a very long process. He also argues that any reconciliation program has also to be adapted to suit individual regions and circumstances. For example, in the town of Braia in the east of the country, Muslims and Christians live together without any major problems. In addition to the four-point plan, the CAR government has also banned short text messages. They had been used, for example, to call on people to take part in anti-government demonstrations, which practically brought the country to a standstill. For Marcel Mokoapi, president of the Central African Consumer Association, this is an attack on the freedom of opinion, which he describes as madness. Cell phone users were taken by surprise. Sylvain, who was only willing to give us his first name, has four mobile phone contracts.
When nothing worked, I first thought it was the usual network problems. But then I heard that the authorities have banned text messages. That really surprised me.
Consumer protection bodies and human rights activists are planning to draw up a response to the ban in the next few days.
That report by D.K. Kopp was presented by Victoria Engels.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Fishy fish business. Ghana risks being blacklisted on the international fishing market. The West African country has seen a rise in fishing that is illegal, unregulated, unreported, or IUU for short. The Fisheries Ministry has said that the restrictions on the trade in fisheries products with the European Union were a result of IUU. And as a clergy reports, Ghana's licensed fishermen are getting worried.
Along the shores of Volta Lake in Greater Accra of Ghana, fishermen at Jamestown Community are getting ready for their daily fishing expedition. They normally use a traditional method of fishing, which is casting their nets deep into the sea to trap the fishes. But the new trend of some of the fishermen who adopted illegal methods such as poisonous chemicals, lightning or dynamite to catch fishes worries them. Nick Pakpo is the chief fisherman here. He says such bad practices have destroyed the water bodies and threatened the livelihood of many genuine fishers.
Before we were using the light in fishing, if you hear a fisherman catch fish, about 200 crates, 300. But now if you hear a fisherman was using light in fishing and he said, oh, he has got a small fish like 30 crates, 20 crates.
Lati Kwoti is among frustrated fishermen. He says the trend has been there for some time now. 3 years ago, he and his colleagues demonstrated to petition the president of Ghana to ensure that illegal fishing methods are tackled. But until now, nothing has happened.
It worries us very much. Because of the situation, many of us are going hungry. We're hardly catching any fish this season. When we're in the June-July period, we have to catch enough fish. But that isn't happening. It's because of the fishing method. We've complained, but nothing is being done about it. We demonstrated, but the government is not acting efficiently to keep us in business.
Pakpo accuses the government's Marine Police Unit, which was established in 2011 to patrol the water bodies, of being ineffective.
Now, Marine Police have been introduced, and they are equipped with logistics. We are not seeing anything.
According to the Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture Development, Nayom Bilijo, the European Union is threatened to blacklist Ghana's fishes on the global market if caught using legal fishing methods. Consumers of fish in the country are worried about their health.
It's very dangerous for our health. They should stop using it for fishing.
Personally, we are in the end times, so many things have changed. Now, you say if you want to get a genuine fish, you will not get it. And they say they want to make money, and they use so many things, worse and miss, and it goes. That is why there's so much sickness in the system. The government need to come in to rationalize some campaign for the fishermen itself to know that their life is at stake, because they consume some of the fish.
Many fish consumers and genuine fishermen hope that the Fisheries and Aquaculture Ministry will really intensify patrolling along the coastal fishing areas as they have promised.
Isaac Kalechi in Accra. And in case you're joining us, this is Africa Link, DW's radio program from Bonn, Germany.
Human rights.
Being attacked and harassed by security forces is one of the disconcerting things that can happen to any journalist. It happened to Alamin Mohammed, our correspondent in northern Nigeria. He had just been given a tip that there had been an explosion near the private residence of the governor of Gombe State. He was the first journalist on the scene and was then physically and verbally abused by a soldier, as he now explains.
The man is chasing me, I'm running, he's choking me with a gun and asking me, leave the place. In the process, my recorder fell down, my handset, my cuff, my shoes, and some of my belongings. I just leave them and run away to save my life. Then somebody I stopped elsewhere. Somebody asked me, started stopping me and asked me to come and collect my things. He brought my recorder. I tried to own the recorder. I found out that the recorder is faulty. So, and they broke my ID card. And along the line, I don't know what happens. They removed my memory card that is inside my recorder. I could not find it up to now.
And how badly were you injured during this attack?
It's not so bad, but I was hurt. They took me with a gun, and the place is a bit painful, but it's not all that serious.
You're saying that the attackers were soldiers. Can you really identify, can you really say that these were really security officers?
They are really security officers. They arrived the place before I was there, before I went there, I mean.
And what are the chances that the attackers will face criminal charges on account of what they did to you?
You know, This is a usual thing in Nigeria. They will attack civilian journalists and all other persons, but nothing will happen. Nobody will ask them, why did they do that? That's why they are doing it.
And they really knew, they really could see that you're a journalist. There was no question about that.
I'm holding my microphone with DW logo on it and my recorder. After all, they asked me to identify myself with my identity card. And I showed them my identity card and they broke it.
Alamin Mohammed, rather, in Gombe. To find out more about the difficulties experienced by journalists covering the Boko Haram insurgency, I turn to Thomas Mersch, head of DW's Hausa service.
Actually, one has to be concerned about what is going on when it comes to reporting on Boko Haram. It is not only this case we have witnessed now with our own correspondent, but we have reports that there is more and more pressure on Nigerian media not to report too much on Boko Haram, because apparently the Nigerian government and the military have the feeling the more coverage Boko Haram gets, the more maybe even they might feel encouraged to be more active, which could be possible. The other issue, of course, is that very often the coverage of what is happening in the Northeast is a bit negative for the government and especially the security forces.
What can international media outlets like Deutsche Welle now do to ensure that any journalists who, say, get accreditation and are able to cover Boko Haram insurgency, that they are better protected while doing their job?
Well, on the ground, there is not so much we can do at the moment and immediately, I think. What we definitely are thinking about is how to give our correspondents specific training on how to deal with situations of conflict, whether it is an area which is under attack by insurgents or whether it is an area that has a highly presentation of military. And the other issue is that we can, of course, go public, what we want to do with in this case as well. We have worked out a press release where we condemn this kind of intimidation of our colleague.
DW's head of Hausa service, Thomas Mersch. And now to some more cheerful news. Three acts, two composers, three music styles. The Mandela Trilogy tells the story of the eventful life of a national icon. It is now playing to German audiences in Munich. Renate Heilmeier has been to see the show and her report has been adapted for Africa Link by Assumpta Latus.
We've got to live. We have to go to the city.
You could describe it simply as an opera, or perhaps as an African musical Broadway opera. But the creators of the Mandela Trilogy prefer to call it a folk opera. It combines two strands. One, the biography of Nelson Mandela retold in an entertaining way, and the other is the link between Nelson Mandela and the South African music. Local rhythms of the Xhosa and other African tribes are woven into jazz music and pop music. Those different styles are merged together to tell the story of the South African freedom fighter Nelson Mandela.
There will be freedom in a time.
Freedom in a time.
That does not flatter down.
This unusual work has just had its German premiere.
I often think of the great warrior prophet Makana and how I ended up imprisoned on the very same island where he was kept all those years ago.
The first act of the Mandela Trilogy speaks about the origins of the main character, Nelson Mandela. It shows a young man being initiated into tribal society. It also tells the story of his first rebellion against restrictions imposed from outside. As a young man, he fled home to escape from a marriage arranged by his parents. He fled from the countryside to the city, where he became a law student and entered into politics.
The first freedom fighter who fought against white domination.
The second act takes place in the 1950s in Sophia Town, a suburb of Johannesburg. It shows repression and protest took place in those years. The Mandela Trilogy was written by Michael Williams. He explains what is in the second act and tells us what to expect in the third.
There we've got the big pata pata and back of the moon elements and the big big band jazz styles. And then Act 3 is again a big serious opera in the proper Western classical style, and it's a very demanding piece, very rhythmic, very hard playing for the players, but like I said, we're very lucky to have such a good orchestra.
It is the blend of African, European and American music that makes the Mandela trilogy rather special for the German audience. The dance, stage performance and the colourful vocals of the Cape Town Opera Choir captivate both jazz and opera fans alike. In 2013, the ensemble received the Best Opera Chorus Award at the newly launched International Opera Awards. Albert Horn is the conductor of the performance and musical director of the Cape Town Opera.
Which was extremely flattering, and we were all of us very shocked when we heard this news that we would be the company that would win the Best Chorus Award. And I think it's richly deserved because they have an incredible timbre to their voices. They sing with great sense of passion and a freshness to the repertoire of Wagner, of Verdi, of Puccini. And they have the ability to express themselves not only through their voices, but also with their entire beings. And I think that's the magic of the Cape Town Opera Chorus.
Nobel Peace Prize winner Nelson Mandela died in 2013 at the age of 95. For many artists and musicians, he was and still is a role model and an inspiration.
That musical report by Renate Heilmeier was presented by Assumpta Lantus.
USA.
Let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we've been covering on this program. Abubakar Jallo joined me in the studio shortly before we came on air.
Hi Crispin. Nigeria's fight against terrorism has been making a lot of headlines lately, and our report on the recent ban of rallies demanding the release of the schoolgirls had many of our online readers talking.
We've been reporting that police in Nigeria's capital, Abuja, have banned rallies in support of more than 200 kidnapped schoolgirls. The move has provoked widespread anger amongst Nigerians, and there is growing public criticism of the government for failing to bring the girls back home.
Kamla Ramjit asked rhetorically, "What is the Nigerian government doing?" "Nothing, obviously." Emmanuel Moore sounded very defensive. "Every country has a problem, Nigeria included, so forget about us." Moise Musa suggested humorously, "Call upon the Ugandan army. They are always willing to help, and most importantly, they never fail." Moise went for the asking, "I heard Americans were already there searching for the missing girls. How far have they gone?"
By the way, that ban against rallies in Abuja has been lifted in the meantime, and Nigerians are back on the streets calling for the release of the schoolgirls.
And now to an email from Ohineba Hinehaninsin, who wrote, "I am happy to inform you that we are really enjoying your broadcast here in Ghana. That's all from me. If it's Friday, it's your say. Now over to you, Crispin."
Thank you very much, Abubakar. Well, you can react to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.de. If you prefer a letter, then it's Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. You'll say we'll be back at the same time next week.
News is everywhere. For the stories that really matter, tune in to Africa Link.
And before we head off for the weekend, a quick summary of our main stories. The UN says war crimes and crimes against humanity have been committed by both sides in Central African Republic. Ghana risks being excluded from the international fishing market due to illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing. We've also been hearing about an attack on one of our correspondents in Gombe, northern Nigeria. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Assumpta Lantus is taking over the microphone next week. Please join her if you can. From me, Crispin Mwakideo, and the rest of the Africa Link crew, have a sunny weekend.